Okay, we'll start here at the bottom of Vayin Vav Amud Bet, second to last line. Hanu Gidin Rachin, said these soft sinews that were brought to Atu Lekamei de Rovo, not Rabo, they switched the Girsa here to Rovo. Amarovo, the Mailichul Shluhu. What are we going to worry about here? Why should we have any issue? Chado, Damar Rabbi Yochanan, when it comes to the Korban HaPesach, Gidin, Shosofan Nakshot, talking about these sinews that in the end will end up hardening. So at this point in time, they're soft, but later on, they will harden. Nimnin alehem bePesach. You're allowed to use that to be one of the zeitim that you have inside the Korban HaPesach, that someone can be or join the Korban HaPesach, and that will be his kezayit basar that he has to eat for the Korban HaPesach. They're classified like basar. Ve'od, HaTorah chasam omunam shel Yisrael. And on top of that, we don't want to just passel things. We don't want to just make things problematic, so people are going to end up losing money on this. So we're going to say, go ahead, they're kosher. Amalei Rav Papa, the Rovo, Rav Shimon ben Lakish. First of all, Rav Shimon ben Lakish argues on Rabbi Yochanan in this instance. The Iser Deoraita. And who we're talking about in Iser Deoraita, we're not just talking about some Iser Derabonon, because we were talking about a treifa, an issue of whether it's a treifa or not. And you're going to say, Atamar, it's my lichushluhu? What are we going to do? You know what? Let's not worry about it. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? We have Rabbi Yochanan, and we don't want people to lose money. So therefore, we don't worry about Shittat Reish Lakish and an Iser Doraita. So it doesn't make sense. Ishtik. He was silent. V'may Ishtik. Why was he silent? V'homer Rovo. Hilchato Kavate Rav Shimon Lakish Behani Tlat. Rava already told us that when it comes to Machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, there are only three instances where the halacha is like Reish Lakish. Nothing to do with Gidin and nothing to do with our halacha over here. They're all found in Yevamot. So what are you worried about Reish Lakish's Shita over here? So Shani Hocha, here it's a little different. The Hadar Bei Rabbi Yochanan Legabi Reish Lakish. Problem is that Rabbi Yochanan's Shita is not so certain here because Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind and held like Reish Lakish in the end. So where did that happen? We actually had this a little earlier in the Masechta. It's actually, it'll come up also later in the Masechta, which is that with certain items in Barur Verotev, there are certain items of the animal that when they're young are soft, and later on they harden. One of them is, or Harosh Shele'egil. The skin on the head of the calf is very soft when it's young. Later on it becomes hard and is inedible. When they're a calf, it's edible. Later on, when they become an adult, it'll no longer be edible. So that Mishnah, which is found later on in our Masechta of Or Verotev, over there it says, Or Rosh Hashalegel Arach, Havik Basar L'tumat Ochlim V'nevelot. V'af Agav D'sofa L'akshot, even though in the end it's going to come hardened, that is Rabbi Yochanan's proof that he's right about the Gidin. You see from this Mishnah, that Mishnah shows you things that are soft in the beginning, in the end that harden, when they're soft, they're classified as Basar. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's proof by the Korban HaPesach that the Gidin, that are soft now, then the end will be like shot, will harden, that they could be okay. They're classified like basar. But Hadar Bei Rabbi Yochanan. How do you know that Hadar Bei Rabbi Yochanan? Because this is the line we saw earlier in the Masechta back on Nunhei, which is, Damalei, Al Teknikteini B'Lashon Yachid Ani Shoneota. Don't question me from that Mishnah, because I learned that Mishnah Kedat Yachid. We had the same machlok as Rashi and Tosafot back then, about Al Teknikteini. Rashi over here says, Yechidohi, Velosvir Lan Kavatei. Rashi just says that Mishnah is a Yechidah, and we don't hold like it. It also says that's not enough for Rabbi Yochanan, because we know that Rabbi Yochanan says, Alocha Kishtam Mishnah. So even if it's a Dat Yechid, if it's a Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, Alocha Kishtam Mishnah. So Tosafot says that he literally had inside of that Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. That it was a Dat Yechid, not just that he claims it's a Dat Yechid, but it's actually written inside of that Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, it's no longer a Stam Mishnah, and it's a Dat Yechid. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the proof that I was using to support my position turns out as a Dat Yechid, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan reversed his position and held like Reish Lakish. He did, basically, Ishtik. He didn't have anything to say. He had no response to him, which means that he basically acquiesced. If he had something to answer, he would have answered. The fact that he doesn't answer is an acquiescence to Rav Papa's question. Reversal? Right, he was aware. So it made a mistake. I mean, that's what it really sounds like. We have a couple of those instances in Baba Batra. We had a couple instances like that where Rava gives up Psak Halacha, and he was wrong. He was just wrong. He had to reverse his position. Right, if he made a mistake. That's what it sounds like. Alright, ho nishbar ha'etzim v'yatza lachutz. So this goes back to what we were discussing on the end of yesterday's daf, which is if you have a broken bone that has protruded outward. So over there we discussed the issue of whether it has rova basar around it or not, the machloket Rav and Shmuel, and then the question of whether it was rova basar, rova vyo, rova kefo, whatever the requirement, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says, l'shitato, that you need both rova kefo and rova vyo. So now the Gemara asks a little slightly different question, which is that the etzem actually broke, but a fracture of the bone broke away from it. The bone broke, but not only did it break, a portion or a piece of the bone, a small piece of the bone, broke away. So after the kamei to Abaye, so they brought the question to Abaye, shia tlate rigle. He held on to it for 3 regalim because he wanted to ask the chachamim. When they came, when the people got together, he wanted to ask everybody's opinion. On the tlata rigla, yeah, Rashi brings, if you see here in Source of Shas, he says, Ayin Rashi Yevomot. So over there, Rashi
brings down that the tlata rigla, he brings down the pshat that he gives here as well as in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And we're talking about the Talmidei Chachamim coming together, Lishma Drashav, Chukot HaPesach, BaPesach, Atzeret BaAtzeret. Obviously, we're not talking about Aliyah LeRegel to the Mikdash because it was already destroyed. So the Regel that we're talking about here is when they gathered together for the Drushot before the Chagim. And that's how he explains it in all these places. But in Yevamot, he brings down an additional explanation, which is B'tshuvat HaGaonim Matzati, Kohanach Rigley de Amorai. Whenever it says the Regel of the Amoraim in the Gemara, Hanu Yom Shemet Bo Adam Gadol. Let's talk about the yard site of a big person. Kovim oto lichvodo, then they establish that day for his kavod, umidei shana b'shana, every year on his yortzeit, kishimagi oto yom, when they get back to that day, mitkabsim tamei chachamim b'kol svivav, all the chachamim from around that area gather together, ubaim al kivro, and they establish on his kever, on his grave, imshara am lo shiv yeshivasham, they learn there on that day. So the Tlat Rigle then would refer to 3 of these yortzeits where the chachamim got together to, whether it was to celebrate, commemorate these individuals and learn by their graves, that would also bring together a large number of Talmidei Chachamim that he could have asked. Obviously, that would be a much shorter duration than the 3 regalim. The 3 regalim is over a span of time, as opposed over here, where we're talking about 3 regalim, depending on how far apart these yortzeit, where it's going to be a much shorter duration than the 3 regalim. Again, Rashi seems to favor his interpretation here. In other places, he just happens to mention the Tshuvat HaGaonim in the Gemara in Yevamot.
It seems like it was alive. I think they're trying to determine whether they could check it. And he has 12 months before it dies for a trefa. Finally, he gets Amalei Rav Ado Bar Matna, Zil Kamei de Rava. So Rav Ado Bar Matna says to the butcher, the one who has the question, go to Rava, Braid Rav Yosef, Bar Chama, the Harifa Sakineh. Go to Rava. Now, the son of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, as Rashi says over here, Hu Rava Bar Pukte de Abaye. This is Rava of Kol Shas Kulo, which is Rava, the son of Yosef Bar Chama, would make sense that the story is about Abaye. And then Father Bar Amanda says, go to Rava, because Harifa Sikinei, he's a sharp knife. Now a sharp knife, a play on words here, it's not that he is a sharp knife and he's a butcher, but he knows Svara. He's able to take care of things like this. Rashi says, Leit Patuach Lo B'Svara. So after the Kamei, they brought it before him, Amrei Michtei, Nishbara Etzem V'yotza Lachutz Tanan. The that's really Tanya because it's the Braita that we had yesterday. He says, but it says Nishbar Etzim V'yatza Lachutz. The bone breaks and goes out. Mali Nafal Mali Ite. Why does it make a difference whether the bone is whole or it's missing a piece of the bone? So he says, let's just look at what the Braita says. If you take what the Braita literally says, the only issue is the exposure of the bone to the outside. That's the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter whether the bone's there or not there. This is a series of questions that we've seen, a similar series of questions, for instance, by the Longs and so on and so forth, that we've seen, where they have a series of questions, most of them they cannot answer, but just positing the questions, scenarios, whether this will be kosher or not. One of them is, mitlakate mahu. What happens if you have rov basar over the bone, but it's not in a continuous line? You have patches of basar over the bone. You have little patch here, patch here, patch here. They add up to rove, but they're not contiguous. What's the din? Mitroses mahu. What happens if the basar had been flattened out? It wasn't its normal thickness. It had been thinned out. The basar punched down, flattened, and it's still covering the bone. Covering the bone, but it's a much thinner piece of basar, flesh, or skin that is sitting over the bone. And then the next one is mit masmes. We've seen this before also by the lungs. Masmes is that it nirkav, it rotted. The basar, the flesh is there, but it's gone bad. It's flesh that's rotting over it, but it's covering it. Mahu. So Gemara says, Echi dame mit masmes. What is that case? I'm Ravuna Breder of Yoshua. Kol sharofe kodro, or the other gears of the Aruch is kordo. It's anything that a doctor normally would have carved out, that he would have sliced out. It's something that you would have removed, that type of rotten flesh. So all of these cases, are they considered coverings for rov, a basar, rov hekefo, rov ovyo? Do these qualify or do not qualify? Then Ibailu, a continuation of these questions. Nikev mahu. What if there's a hole? There is rov basar over this area, but in that rov basar there's a hole that penetrates all the way through to the bone. There's a hole over it, nothing missing from the basar, but just a hole that punctures through. Now the order of the Gemara here probably should switch, which is the next question would be nisdak mahu. What happens if there's actually a sedek cracked through and there's some missing piece there that it went through? And then the last question would be niklaf mahu. What happens if it's actually peeled away? Meaning the basar is still there, but it's peeled away. And then the last would be nitel shlisha tachton mahu. What happens if the basar is there, but the lower third of the basar is actually missing? So the thickness is taken away, the lower part of the thickness is taken away. So the first question would be niklaf. What happens if the basar is peeled away from the bone, but it's still there? It can sit over the bone, but it's peeled away from the bone. The second question after that would be imtim saloma. That's what Rashi says. Imtim saloma niklaf below chisarona basar kasher. If it's a niklaf without anything missing, what happens if you have niklaf with something missing, which is the bottom third of the flesh is missing, so it no longer attaches to the bone. Not only does it not attach because it's just peeled away, it doesn't attach because it's missing the lower level of basar that would have sat on the bone. Mahu. So all of these questions really focus on the issue of whether this can heal, whether these coverings are going to remain and hold things in place and heal. Is it Malei Aruka? Will it grow back? Will it regenerate itself? How damaged is the basar here so that it won't grow back? I mean, the series of questions that we just saw here, whether it's mitlakeit, it's mitmasmeis, mitroseis, all these questions are questions are, okay, it's covered. But it being covered, it indicates to us that there's a healthy growth that's going to come back here and cause it to repair itself. And in all these cases, there's some question to us whether that will happen or not. So Tashma, let's try at least to answer one of these questions. Damar ulam Rabbi Yochanan, or harehu kebasar. Yochanan says that the flesh and the skin have the same din. So it sounds like here that if you just have the skin without the basar below it, that would be fine. That would answer our question about the shlisha tachton, at least, or probably niklaf as well, which is that even though it's missing underneath, as long as you have something covering it, that's fine. So Gemara says, v'dilma dekana mashcha didei. So maybe the case there by Rabbi Yochanan is dekana mashcha didei. That's the girsa of Rashi. We'll see in a second that the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rabbeinu Tam had a different girsa. So Rashi says, shechzika or b'shelo, klomar, hatam labini tala basar mitachtav. That case is not a case where there once was skin and flesh, but rather va'oro made bavir kamar, and then what's left is just the skin now without the flesh. It was at a place where the bone gets very close to the area of the skin. It's in a location where there is no basar, that the bone sits right up against the skin. Basar samuch la'arkova, right by the knee. By the knee, you have no flesh underneath it. You just have the skin that sits right over the bone. She'en sham ela or. Va'or davuk yafe be'etzem machziko. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan's statement has no proof to what we're suggesting over here, because maybe Rabbi Yochanan's case where he said that skin is like flesh is where, that's where the skin was the only thing that was there anyway. There was only skin there. There was no flesh there beforehand. So he's not talking about a case where the flesh is gone and now the skin can replace the flesh or be there in place of the flesh. No, it's a case where there was only skin and that's what remains. He says that's still good enough. In those areas where there was only skin, the skin is good enough to be considered a cover. So that won't prove anything about our case. That's the Girs of Rashi. If you look in Tosafot, there's an alternative Girs of Bekunjas Garas Vidalad. Beinu Chananel or Beinu Tam Garsi Bereish. Perish. Ririm Lecha Shelo. That they were actually stringy, moist connections between the or, the skin, and the bone. So yes, the basar was missing, but there was some moist, stringy material that ran between the skin and the bone, which was an indication of the healing process, already a given that it would heal. So they kept the skin attached. So even though the basar was missing, there was something else there that gave indicate. Something that indicated to us that there would be regeneration because of that connection to the bone. Whereas when it's just the skin flopping around, there's no indication that that will grow back or that will heal at that point in time. So that's the Girso, the Reino Tam, and the Reino Hanano. They're both saying a similar thing, which is that the statement of Reino Hanan is not relevant to our case. Because in either case, according to Rashi, there was never basar there. According to the Reino Hanano and the Reino Tam, there was something there that indicated that there would be regeneration or healing. So that can't prove anything about our case where the basar is missing. Samar of Ashi, Kavina and Beir of Popi, Ibayalon, he asked us, Nikdar kemin tabat maho. If it was carved out like a ring, what's the din? So this is a case where there is rov basar, rov ovio and rov hekefo around the break. But around that basar, there's a carved out circle around it. So you have what you need around the break. But around that skin that's a wave away from the break, there's now a circle that surrounds it that disconnects it from the rest of the basar. So if you have that, the question again is it male aruka? Does it grow back? Does it heal? Because we think you have a independent basar and or that's sitting over the break, but it's disconnected from the rest of the basar and skin of the animal. It's attached to the bone, and there's above it, and below it, and around it, there's this stuff, but there's a carve-out that doesn't allow them to connect. In that case, what's the story? Pashtana miha. We answer from this. Damar Rav Yehuda Merav. Dove zeh she'alti l'chachamim u'l'rofim. Very interesting. This I asked both the chachamim and the rofim, and the medical doctors. So he knew that it wasn't enough that he had to ask the chachamim. He needed an indication from the rofim about what the actual case was. It also indicate that they were tied into the medicine and the knowledge of the time. Again, relating to things that we dealt with earlier in the Masechta in Elu Trefot, which is that they were being somech on the refuah of their time, and things like the connection between the circulatory and the respiratory systems and other things that we saw in Elu Trefot. Over here, it's clear that he was asking both the Chachamim and the Rufim, Ramru. Misarto be'etzem, cut it with a bone. Umale aruka. Aval parzula mizraf zorif. Depends on if misarto be'etzem de alma umetoch shemotzi dam mitchaber basar v'nimshach zeitzul ze umale aruka chayim derech harofim. On the other hand, mizraf zorif befarzula. Farzula is with a metal. Asu charitzim be'basar. They cut through umachiva makeh, and that causes actually the wound to worsen and deteriorate. So the difference would be, if you cut it, or you slice it, the etzem,
around the flesh that is left there in the center, to cause it to bleed slightly, that will enable it to begin to regenerate and regrow and connect with the skin and flesh that is around it. So that's the way to cause it to cure itself. On the other hand, if you use a metallic or iron instrument to cut through it, instead of causing the regeneration or healing of that area, it actually causes it inflammation and to degenerate and not reconnect with the original flesh and basar that is around it.
Which is a similar lashon that we had before by Rashi, which is dekana mashka didei, which is that the skin belongs there, and that was a part where the skin thinned out. Over here is dekana garma didei, shenu ruim she'etzem machzik b'shalos v'ivot hagdera midbak etzem labasar, that the flesh still holds on. The fact that it's still attached to the bone and it's holding tight to the bone shows you as an indication that it's going to regrow. Because the fact that it holds on tight and that it's still part of the bone is an indication that it's still alive and it will heal itself. As opposed to if it's already starting to loosen away or detach from the bone, that's already an indication that it's dead or dying, and it will not, male arukai, will not regenerate itself or spread to reconnect with the rest of the skin around it or flesh around it. All right, next Mishnah. Ashocheda da bema ubat matzabash aliyah. So somebody shechs a behema, and in it they find a placenta. Nefesh ayafeh tochlena. It's a term we saw before in the Mishnah. Someone who's not too picky, not too choosy, can eat it, no problem. Because it's found inside the animal. You have a shechita now. It's fine, you can eat it. Ve'eino mitama lo tumat ochlim v'lo tumat nevelot. It's not tumat nevelot over here because it's considered a part of the mother. It's not metamei tumat ochlim Because it's not automatically an ochel. Because only a nefesh ha-yafeh would eat it. So unless someone has a machshava to eat it, its default status is not one of food. As opposed to basar, as opposed to the regular flesh of the animal, where people would eat it. In that case, it automatically has status of ochlim. And if it gets mukhshah the kabel tumah, then it can be mekabel tumah tochlim. Over here, this will not gain status of tumah tochlim or the status of ochel to be nikhshar al yaday, some liquid to become tameh, unless you have machshava that it will be food. On the other hand, if he intends to eat it, then it's mitameh tumah tochlim. At that point, they can accept tumah tochlim. About lo tumat nevelot, it's still not considered to be tumat nevelot because, first of all, you had shechita on the mother. And number two is, it's not classified as basar. Even though it's ra'ui la'achila, now when someone has in mind to eat it, it's not classified as flesh. It's not classified as flesh. Nevela is only relevant to flesh, not relevant to bones and to other parts of the animal. So therefore, if it's not classified as basar, it will never have tumat nevelot. So that's even if the mother was not nishchat, the mother was a nevela, then it would not be or take on tumat nevelot. Shalyash yatzta miksata, a placenta that exited, a portion of it exited, a surah b'achila, then it becomes a surah b'achila, because it's a siman v'lad b'yishah, a siman v'lad b'veimah. That was, we quoted this earlier in the Masechta, that the release of the placenta is an indication of there being a live being inside of the, there's a birth, there's some birth that took place here, whether it's by a human being or whether by it's an animal, that's a classification of a birth. What are we afraid of here? That the fetus was crushed, and the fetus is now exiting with part of the placenta, and the part that's exiting is the head, or was the head of that fetus. So that's our fear over here. Once the head leaves, we know that's considered a birth, and the shechita of the mother is no longer relevant or efficacious with regards to this fetus. Amivakeret shipila shulya. This is a animal. It's having its firstborn. This is the first one, and it discharges the placenta. Yashlichena leklavim, you can throw it away to the dogs. Because the underlying assumption is that it's not a bechor. Ala rov, that's not a bechor. The Gemara discuss why that is. Ube mukdashim tikaver. On the other hand, by mukdashim, ala rov, it is kodesh. The difference being nikevot, females. By females, females do not qualify to be a bechor. So therefore, the majority of what is discharged by a behema will not be kadosh mukdushat bechor. On the other hand, by mukdashim, anything that's hekdesh that gives birth, whether it's a zechar or nekeva, they will be kadosh. So therefore, the rov there are kadosh, and that's why you have to bury it. Ve'en korvimato b'parshat drachim, you cannot bury it at the forks in the road. Ve'en tolinta be'ilan, it's not hanging on trees, mipnei darchei amori. This is something that the amorim, a practice that they have, that has no medical efficacy, and therefore it's considered to be darchei amori, and you're not allowed to copy it and do such a thing, because they thought that would stop miscarriages in the future. So manane mile. How do we know this is true? Tachanra banan. Kol be'imat tochelu, rabol tetashalya. That anything inside the animal, you can eat. This is something we, again, we did earlier in the Parak and earlier in the Masechta. Anything that's found inside the animal can be eaten. Even a placenta. I would think even if a portion of it exited, only it, and not its placenta. There is no placenta without some sort of fetus. What do I need a puzzle for? I don't need a process to tell me that if the shilya exits, that there's also a problem, maybe that the vlad exited here. Why do I need posuk to tell me that there's a possibility that a fetus left at this point in time? If a fetus left at this point in time, it's obvious, we had that early in the Masechta, the fetus leaves the mother's womb, it's no longer covered under the shechita of the mother. So my says, enochanami. Across asmachta ba'alma. It's just a asmachta, but enochanami. The reason that the shilya is problematic is because when it leaves, it's a siman of the vlad. We're afraid that a vlad left here is already the robe of the vlad or the rosh of the vlad already left the mother, and therefore the shechita is no longer efficacious in taking care of the shilya. When it's found inside, that pasuk is right. It's called b'meimat tochelu, which is anything inside of the animal you can eat. That does cover the shilya. But the fact when it exits, you can no longer eat it. That's just pure logic. We have an asmakta from the krab, but you don't need a pasuk to teach you that. Veinu mitama. By Rav Yitzchak ben Nachma, or chamor sheshalko mahu. If you take the skin of a donkey and you cook it a lot till it softens, what's the din there? So Gemara says the mai. What do you want to know this din about? Ilu tumat ochlim. If you want to know whether it's mekabel tumat ochlim, tanina. That we already have a Tanaic work that teaches about it. Ilu tumat nevelot. If you want to know about tumat nevelot, tanina. We also learned about it. Tumat tochlim de tanya. By tumat tochlim, we already have it. De tanya. Ha'or v'shulya ein mitamim tumat tochlim. So that when it comes to or and shulya, they are not mitamei tumat tochlim because these are not items that are not normally eaten. They're not food. Then they're not classified as a tumat tochlim. Or shishalko v'shulya shechishev aleha. On the other hand, if you have in mind to eat this skin, you're going to cook it. And you're going to eat it. V'ashalya, or the placenta that you intend to eat. Shechish v'lehem etamim tumat ochlim. They do become tumat ochlim because you've made them, or you classified them, you've elevated them to the point where they will be ochlim. Tumat nevelot nami tanino. Our tumat nevelot we also have. Nivleta v'lo ba'or, v'lo ba'atzamot, v'lo ba'gidim, v'lo ba'karnayim, v'lo talfayim. So when it comes to nevela is only shayach by the basar. It's only shayach by the flesh of the animal. It is not shayach by all of these other items that are not classified as flesh, which are skin, bones, sinews, horns, and hooves. So now that's included, but here it's obvious that the or is not included in tumat nevelot. That he made them into the tzikei kedera. And as Rashi describes over here, the tzikei kedera is they spiced them up a lot. Bishlan arbei im tablin. He cooked them a lot with spices. In fact, I assume that you put spices in there is an indication already that you intend to eat it. Why would you cook skin and put spices in unless your intent was to eat the skin?
Rabbi Baruch Hanan has come to say that the chiddush of this brayta with regards to or with skin is that even if you make it into food, even if you're processing it in a way that looks like you're making it into food, nevertheless, it's not mekabel tumat nevela. So, of course, in our case, when we're talking about the skin of a donkey, where you haven't done anything to process the food except to boil it up, of course, that's not going to be mekabel tumat nevela, because the chiddush of the brayta is even in a case where you do make it into something that's food, that's not classified as nevela.
So what's your question here? You have the skin of a chamor that you cooked up. So now your question is, tumat tochlim tumat nevelot. As far as tumat nevelot, we already have Tanaic works in our Mishnah as well that tell us that nothing doing here. Tumat nevelot does not apply to skin. So there's no tumat nevelot. That we answer already. Tumat ochlim. Tumat ochlim has to do, and we saw this in our Mishnah as well, whether you intend to eat it or not intend to eat it. If you don't intend to eat it, or nobody had in mind to eat it, then it's not classified as tumat ochlim. You intend to eat it after you cooked it well, then that will be classified as tumat ochlim. What's your question over here? Rabbi Yisrael Nafka, what's your question over here with regards to the skin of a chamor? The shiny or chamor de ma'is. Difference over here is that when it comes to the skin of a chamor, of a donkey, that's different than other skins because it's disgusting. And there's something different about the quality and the makeup of the skin of the donkey that makes it less appealing, less palatable, less appealing. And therefore, that was Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nafka's question. I know by other skins, if you have in mind to eat them, Ein ochanami becomes tumat tumat ochlim. If you cook them with spices, that's an indication that you tend to eat them, that's tumat ochlim. Question is, by the skin of a chamor, does that have the regular classification of other skins? Because of its nature, maybe, but lo dato, it's okol adam. That we're not going to listen because it's ma'us, it's disgusting. And then even if he does it, those people are not going to eat it. We're not going to classify it as tumat ochlim. Alright, shaliyah shiatzta. Zam rabbi lazlo shanu elish eini mavlad. That's only true when we have a placenta without a fetus. If there's a fetus there, in choshishim levad acher, we assume that this placenta belongs to the fetus that's there, and we don't assume that there was another fetus that got crushed and it is with this that belonged to this placenta, and this fetus had a placenta that's missing. That we don't assume. We do worry about there being another vlad if there's a placenta. Ini, is that really true? Is the way you're explaining this correct? Because we heard from Rabbi Yirmiya that Rabbi Lazar is the machmir over here. Well, the way we have it laid down there right now, Rabbi Lazar is the mekil. Rabbi Lazar says we're not choshesh for another vlad when there's a fetus there. Rabbi Yochanan says we are choshesh for another vlad. That would indicate that Rabbi Lazar is the mekil and Rabbi Yochanan is the machmir. But we have a mesorah. Rabbi Yirmiya says that Rabbi Lazar is the chumrah. So that can't be the explanation of their machloket. Eli itmar hachi itmar. This is the way to explain their machloket. That's only true if it's not attached to the vlad, meaning that there is no umbilical cord, basically, that connects the fetus to the placenta. If it's attached to the placenta, there's an umbilical cord running from the fetus to the placenta, then we assume that there's no other vlad in there. V'Rabbi Yochanan Kamar, Anu Ein Lanu Ela Shulya B'lo Vlad, Ava Yeshim Avlad, Ben K'shura B'Vlad, Ben Ein K'shura B'Vlad, Ein Choshim L'Vlad Acher. And Rabbi Yochanan now comes to be Mekil and says, it's irrelevant whether it's connected to the placenta or not connected to the placenta. Either way, we're not Choshesh for another Vlad. We assume whatever was discharged, if you have a fetus and a placenta, the two belong together, and we're not going to worry about any other Vlad being in there. Now that makes sense. What Rabbi Yirmiyah says, that the Chumrah Rabbi Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar is the Chumrah here. Rabbi Lazar will only say we're not Choshesh for another Vlad when they're attached. The placenta and the fetus are attached. When they're detached, we're going to assume that this fetus had its own placenta that discharged already, and this placenta is relevant to another fetus. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan will say it's irrespective of whether it's attached or not attached. If there's one placenta and one fetus, they belong together. Tanya Kavati de Rabbi Lazar. We actually have a braita that supports his position, Rabbi Lazar. Hamapelet min beima chaya ba'of. V'shilya imahen. So this is according to the day of the Chachamim, that if she's mapelet, an animal of any sort or a bird of any sort, they are not metamei tumat leida. Then shilya imahen. On top of that, there is a placenta with them. Bismach shuraban, if the placenta is connected to these types of discharge, fetus discharges that the woman has, then we assume the placenta is connected to them. Ein choshishim levlad acher. Then we don't worry about there being another fetus. Ein shuraban, on the other hand, if the placenta is not connected to them, harini matil alei chomer shnei vladot. I assume that there were two birds over here. Two birds over here, because the bird that came out, in terms of the behema chai ve'of, is not relevant. Because, according to the Chachamim, they are not metamei tumat leida. On the other hand, I do have a placenta that's exiting, that's not attached to them. What am I going to assume was that there was another fetus in there. And that fetus had a human shape to it. And it was crushed and went out. When the placenta discharged, it went out with that placenta. So now I'm going to say the woman gave birth, but she didn't give birth. What does that mean? That normally when a woman gives birth, we have a days of Tumah, for Zachar, 7 days of Tumah, 33 days of Tohar. If it's an Ikeva, she has 14 days of Tumah, and then 66 days of Tahara. Over here we take Chomer Shnei Avladot, she ends up having to take 2 weeks of Tumah, because maybe it was a female that she discharged, but then after that she's going to get no days of Tohar, because maybe she didn't give birth at all. Maybe the placenta belonged to that Chaya, Of, or Behema that she discharged, which is not classified as a Leida. So we're going to assume she did have a leida and she didn't have a leida l'chumra. So then she'll have to keep 2 weeks of tumah and no days of tahara. And this is even, again, if she had a, what we call, niftafka kever below dam. She gave birth without any blood being visible. So the only thing, it's a leida yaveshta, dry birth. So the only thing we need to worry about is the leida itself. Did she give birth or did she not give birth? Well, that will all depend on whether there was a fetus that was a human-shaped fetus that came out. That we don't know. So we're going to be choshesh l'shnei etzadim because the placenta is detached from the item that was the fetus that was discharged. So that's like Rabbi Lazar, that if it's attached, it's considered to be one. If it's not attached, we worry about another vlad. She'ani omer. This is to answer your question. She'ani omer, shemani mach shapir shel shaya. Maybe the sac that held the fetus that is connected to the placenta, that either discharged, deteriorated, or was crushed. V'shemani mocha shel yato shel shapir. And the fetus that's being discharged, maybe its placenta was discharged or rather went bad and is no longer here. So we assume that the placenta and the sac, the fetus being discharged, are actually two different entities. And each one's missing its other half. One's missing its placenta, and the other one's missing its fetus.
Just a note over here, that I explained the sugya according to Rash in the Rabbonon, that who believes that a woman who miscarries a behemah, chayah, oaf, any animal-like figure, that's not called a leida. Tosafot disagrees and seems to favor that the Gemara should be read Aliba de Rabbi Meir, who believes that that is a full-fledged birth. If that's the case, then when we say here, Shnei Chumrei Vladot, when we say in the end that we place on her the chumrat of two births, as opposed to the way I explained it in the Rabbonon, that there's one non-birth, and then there was a chashash for one birth, so we end up only with 2 weeks of Tumah, the actual chashash here would be a chashash for a Leidat Zachar and Nekeva. If gave birth to a Nekeva already, then there's nothing to talk about. But if the Mehin Chemaya, Of, and Behema, according to Bemeir, were Zachar, then we'd be choshesh at the other Vlad that we don't see here as a Nekeva, and therefore the woman will get 2 weeks of Tumah. And then after that, instead of getting the 66 days of Tahara, we'd be choshesh that it's a Zachar, and then she would only be able to go until the 40th day with Yimei Tahara, minus the 2 weeks, so she would get 26 days of Tahara. because we're taking the chumrah to both a zachar and a keva. That's at least according to Tosafot, reading the Gemara, libe the shita at Rabbi Meir.
Hamevakeret shehipila, a firstborn that's coming out of an animal. So why is it when the firstborn that comes out and it's a shaliyah, just a placenta, we assume that it's not kadosh b'kedushat b'chorah, my timer. Amravika breder of Ami, ro beimot yodot davar hakadosh b'chorah. Miyod beimot davar shein hakadosh b'chorah. If you have a zachar that is born, a male that is born to an animal, it's its firstborn, majority of them will be kadosh b'chorah, that is, any male that's born that is exactly like its mother, that'll be fine. Mind you, what's the exception in that case? A nidme. Nidme is another kosher animal, but it's not of the mother's type or species. For instance, that you have a rachel that gives birth, a lamb, a ewe that gives birth to an ease, to a goat. So over there, it should be kadosh b'kedusha b'chorah. The problem is that it's a mother giving birth to a different species of animal, different type of animal. So since it's that case, we have a pasuk we learn in b'chorot that it's not kadosh b'kedusha b'chorah. So now, you know, row of animals that are given born to a zachar, a male, will be kadosh b'kedusha b'chorah because they're a male. And the only exception in that case is you have a nidme. You have a male, but it's of a different species. A ewe gives birth to a goat. In that case, a woman have a kadosh b'kedusha b'chor. Now, on top of that, we have b'chol yodot. In general, when animals give birth, mechsa yodot, mechsa zecharim, mechsa nekevot. It's a 50-50 shot that you have a male or a female. So 50-50 shot male-female. Females are not kadosh b'kedusha b'chorah, whereas a male is. So that's a 50-50 shot. On top of that, samuch miuta de nidme de mechsa de nekevot, if I take the 50% of females, plus the miut, the minority of males that are born, that are not classified as kedusha b'chorah because they are not the same species, I put those here, avilu zecharim miuta. Then a male that would qualify to be a b'chor is the miut. That means that rogue births do not end up in a kedushat b'chor. Because of that, you can toss it out to the klavim, you can throw it out to the dogs. If they give birth to a male. If they give birth to a male, the majority of those will be kadosh b'kedushat b'chorah. In a male, there's a minority that will not be classified or may not kadosh b'kedushat b'chorah. Right, the last thing, u'mukdashim tikaver, when it comes to those that are mukdashim tikaver, ma'itama ruba bar mikdashu. Over there, whether it's a male or a female, it is kadosh because it's a derivative of something that's hekdesh. The only thing that will not be kadosh is a nidmeh. That's a minority. When it's a different species that it gives birth to, then it'll be not kadosh. Everything else will be kadosh, the kedusha of a korban, and therefore the majority will be, and that's why you have to bury it. Vein kovrim ota, when you bury it, you can't bury it at the fork of the road, you can't bury it hanging on a tree. This is very important. Anything that is efficacious medically is not a problem of darchei mori. If it has no medical reason, it's not efficacious, there's no rationale behind it, that's what's called darchei mori. People do things because they're superstitious, or for some superstition, that is what's called darchei mori. A tree that's dropping its fruit. So krov sikra, you paint it, v'tono b'avanim, and you place heavy rocks on it. Bishlamo tono b'avanim, good, the reason that you place on avanim, ki heche de nichosh chele, to weaken it. The reason that it's dropping its fruits is because it's too strong, it has too much fat, as they call inside of it, it has too much sap, and that's causing the fruits to prematurely ripen and drop off the tree. So what do? You pile rocks on it to weaken it so it doesn't have as much strength to allow its fruits to fall off. Why do we paint the tree? So if that's the case, it's darchei mori. It has no medical purpose. It's not efficacious to help the tree out. So why do you paint it? That sounds like darchei mori. When it says, people will see it, they'll know this is a tree that's having problems, and they'll daven that this tree will be better. Kiritanya, we have a bright of a tamei, tamei yikra, by a mitzora. He has to call out that he's tamei. Sorchlo, deal the rabbim. He has to let everybody know that he's a mitzora. Verabim mevakshim alav rachamim. Because then the public, the tzibu, will ask for rachamim on him. They'll daven for him. V'chein, and this is an important halacha, this is an ikud halacha, mishira bo davar tzarech lehodia l'rabim. Something when something bad happened to them, they should let other people know about it. Rabim makhshim alav rachamim, so people can daven for them. Again, the general practice is that they wait a day. You wait a day or two to make sure that it's really something that's serious. And then you let the rabim know so they can be mevakesh rachamim, unless you know right away that it's serious. Tefillah at tzibur is important. And say them so people know about it, publicize that someone's having an issue so others can daven on their behalf. Amarvina, Kaman, Talin, and Kupsa, Bidikla, when we hang on a bunch of dates on a deco, on a palm tree, indicating that it's dropping its fruit, why do we do that? Kaman, Ki Hai Tana, like this Tana that says that we want people to know there's something wrong here, so they should daven for it. Okay, so we'll stop over here.